operation called Anti-Sec, which continued
Anti-Security,
to continue on with the hacking that they had started, although this time it had a much more political bent to it, an explicit political flavor to it.
Peter Fine, talk about how you got involved, and we appreciate that we can see your face, that you're able to talk to us, and how Telecomix is a part of this and take this global.
Sure. I am a computer programmer, and when the WikiLeaks crisis happened at the end of last year, I was outraged, just that the government and could pressure on large corporations to silence and stop the ability for this organization to receive funding. I, you know, made some videos about that, and in the course of looking for an audience for those, I stumbled upon the anonymous IRC network. That network is public. If you Google for anonymous IRC, the first hit you will get is one of the anonymous internet relay chat networks. I helped organize some protests in support of WikiLeaks. We put together events in 105 cities in 1 week of public planning. Shortly thereafter, I got involved with this organization called Telecomix. Telecomix is not anonymous. This is a separate group of people. There is some overlap in personnel. We operate similarly in using IRC and also in the ways in which we're decentralized and lacking formal members and any sort of leaders. But on the Telecomix side, where Anonymous is running around breaking things, Telecomix believes that the best way to support free speech and free communication is by building tools that we can use to provide ourselves with those rights, rather than relying on governments to respect them.
And where did you get
that work? Got us involved.
Where did you get the term Telecomix? The name Telecomix.
It originated with a group of Europeans who were opposing a EU telecoms package about 2.5 years ago. And so for the first year and a half or so of its existence was largely a think tank providing political information working in the legislative process, as well as working on encryption tools. When things started to get a little crazy in Egypt, we moved into a bit more of a proactive role. We were very active, Tunisia, Egypt, Libya, Syria, trying to keep the internet running in these countries in the face of really almost overwhelming efforts by governments to shut them down.
Talk quickly about Tunisia, which helped to spark the uprising in Egypt, and exactly what your groups did.
So during the events in Tunisia, the Tunisian government was blocking people's ability to access Twitter and Facebook. They were also sniffing the passwords of Facebook users by injecting some code into those web pages. And so Telecomix and Anonymous helped provide people in Tunisia on the ground with tools to circumvent the censorship.
And then moving on to Egypt and what your role is, what you did.
Sure. You know, there were really two phases of our work in Egypt. Some of it very similar to Tunisia, where we were helping people access Twitter, helping people evade censorship. And then things got really, really crazy when the government of Egypt basically pulled the only fiber optic cable into the country out of the wall. They more or less cut off all internet, cell, and SMS service throughout the country. Which forced us to get a little creative. We set up, working with users and ISPs around the world, we used some 1980s technology. We set up about 500 dial-up modem lines where people could call in and access the internet over those lines. We also sent communication and medical advice, such as treatments for tear gas, to every fax machine in Egypt that we could find. because that was more or less the only way we could get information in and out of the country.
And what you're doing in Syria, what Telecomics, what different hacktivists are doing in Syria?
Sure. The situation in Syria is a little different. Whereas in Tunisia, they did some computer trickery to access people's Facebook passwords. In Syria, the police just torture people, just outright torture people for their Facebook passwords. That situation is a little more precarious. We've been helping to provide people with encrypted tunnels called VPNs and Tor. To evade some of the censorship. We've also been helping Syrians to publish videos and texts and poetry that they would not be able to do safely or at all.
Could you quickly talk about how the media covers cyber activists like you, Peter?
Yeah. Most of the focus has been on what the mainstream form of hacking, like what the folks at Lowell Security do, like what X has done on Bart.gov. And the original meaning of the word hack is simply to use a system in a way its designer didn't intend, to play a clever technical trick. And that goes back to the origins of computer programming. And so when you talk to a computer programmer who's like really in the groove and like writing good code, he'll tell you he's hacking code. That's something that is in some ways very different than hacking or defacing a website, but falls under that rubric of using systems in clever ways. And so, I consider myself a code hacker, but I don't hack websites. I don't DDoS sites. I don't do anything illegal. My wife would kill me.
Gabriella Coleman, what about the rumors that Anonymous plans to take down Facebook?
So that was just announced recently. And interestingly enough, that was actually one campaign that produced a lot of debate within Anonymous itself. Sometimes there's a campaign that seems to carry a lot of consensus throughout the different nodes and networks. And this one was a little bit more controversial, in part because of the resource question. Facebook is actually very, very difficult to take down. It's a large company with lots of system administrators and servers. So some people said this might be impossible. And it's also a little different because it's planned so much in advance. I think many of the operations we've seen, whether it was Tunisia or BART, really bubbled up within a day or two, got a lot of attention, and then was quite successful. So we'll see if something that's planned so much in advance will take hold.
Very quickly, you've just come back from Berlin, where you went to Computer Chaos Club Camp. About 25,000 people were there. We just have about 10 seconds. The significance of this global movement.
Slightly smaller, 2,500.
2,500.
We were all camping.
Yes, that is. Even if it is a zero, that makes the difference.
And I think the significance is that there are so many geeks and hackers with certain digital literacies and technical skills, and many of them are marshaling these skills for political purposes. I think we're going to see this more and more in the past, and it has a long tradition as well.
Gabriella Coleman, thanks for being with us from New York University, and thank you to Peter Fine joining us from Seattle with the group Telecomics. That does it for our broadcast. Our website is democracynow.org. Happy birthday to Nick Gyllenkell on Innocent. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berker, Nick Feltzer, and Mate Nermin Sheikh. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us. Democracy Now! Is a listener-supported grassroots global news hour. You make it possible when you donate at democracynow.org. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Amy. And it is now 6 p.m. on a Tuesday evening, and that can only mean one thing. On WUSB, Stony Brook.
And a good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. This week, once again, we're in Denmark. And in this particular episode, Kyle and I are on a train heading from Copenhagen to Hamburg in Germany. And this is the train that actually goes onto the boat. So we'll be discussing that in great detail. Also, listening to some Danish radio This was recorded back in December of 2010. Enjoy.
Släkteband. Välkommen till Släktband som idag handlar om den svenske pälsjägaren Alex Falkörn i Alaska.
Well, Carl, jag har en god plats här. Den bästa platsen för villebråd och fisk nära på i hela Alaska. Har inte sett eller hört om någon bättre. Det är ett långsamt liv, men man blir van vid allting och är inte alldeles ensam här. Jag har en varg som går och nosar omkring min cabin om nätterna. I början av juni så kommer björnarna ut från idet och då blir det mycket company. Brukar vara ute med bössan varje dag. Det är mycket änder här, svarta och vita och alla färger. Några grågäss kommer också. Såg en älg häromdagen. Det är både älg och renar här. Grädde upp ett stycke land här och planterade potatis. Ja, som du ser, potatisen växer och bäckarna är fulla av fisk och skogarna är fulla av kött. Och mer kan man önska sig i livet.
Hey, this train's catching up to us now.
Is it?
Oh, that. Yeah.
Yeah, he waved. No, he didn't. I'm just kidding. He didn't wave.
Oh, it could mean that we're stopping again.
Oh, dear. Wow. So, yeah, that's a locomotive.
Hey, look, it's us in the window.
Yeah, and that's...
Maybe we can let all these people off that are sitting, standing between cars.
Yeah.
We're also switching tracks.
Oh, we're getting behind it. Is that what we're doing?
I don't think so. I don't think they do it that quickly.
Yeah, maybe not. Yeah, I think that one's on the outside track. We just got in a lane closer, but it's very much like a highway. You know, it's that casual. Or I guess we do more highways, so... and not enough trains, so it's the only thing I can compare it to. But, yeah, you know, you have a train from Denmark, a Danish train.
Oh, is this the same train again? Now we're passing it at the station.
Yeah, now it's stopping. Are we not going to stop here, though?
I hope not.
I don't think we're stopping here.
Well, we're sitting here on a train in first class, and there's a story behind that, heading from Copenhagen to Hamburg, but we're going to be taking a boat in between the two countries, because that's how it works. This train actually gets onto a boat and goes between Denmark and Germany.
I'm excited. I'm so glad that we were able to make this work, because it was a... hell of a time trying to get it to work, but we made it, and we're here in first class. It's really nice.
We've had some trouble with the... Oh, look at the old locomotive there.
Yeah, really.
Isn't that cool? Wow, it's like Charlie Choo Choo or whatever.
missed the locomotive.
That's one of those old trains. Well, I don't know what they call them.
Sure, well, that's probably good.
But I don't think it was in use. It was just like part of an exhibit. But we've had some issues with the trains. And, well, let's see. In Norway, for instance... What happened in Norway? We were in Tromsø. We wanted to go to Oslo. And I went online to buy the ticket. And I bought the ticket, got a good price. It was a really good price. The next price to the one that I got was something like four or five times as expensive. And when you keep in mind, everything in Norway is really expensive. It was immensely expensive to take that train if I didn't get the discounted rate. So I was happy to get that. And I filled out all the information, gave my credit card information, all that. And hit the confirm button on the web page and was met with a blank page. So I didn't know what to do. Is the confirmation email going to come through or not? Waited and waited. After a few hours, nothing happened, so I did it again. I decided to submit a second order, thinking that if I did that and it got billed twice, it would be easy to get that off my bill. Same thing happened. I got a blank page. Then I tried in a different browser. I tried using Chrome instead of Safari, and I could not get past that blank page. It was late at night, so I couldn't call anybody to ask them what in the world was going on. But the next day, when I got up and checked it again, checked for mail, there was no mail, checked the web page, well, guess what? The fare was gone. It was now four times as expensive, and I was livid. I was really upset. So I called them. And they basically said, no, but we don't take American credit cards. We take MasterCard, but we don't take American credit cards. And it was unbelievable. Apparently, it's a combination of fraud and and I guess technology or something. We've found this to be true in Norway, Sweden, and Denmark so far. It's very hard to use American credit cards, even when they're the same credit cards that everybody around here uses. In fact, we tried to see a movie in Tromsø, and we're told that no American credit cards were accepted. We take Visa, MasterCard, American Express, but no American... We take American Express, but we don't take American Express. I mean, how ridiculous is that? But that is what they do, and that is what our credit card companies apparently agree to as well. There are some places that charge you a fee for using an American credit card, and then when you get home, you get charged another fee by the credit card companies for a foreign transfer transaction or whatever. It's madness. I mean, if you were using a different kind of credit card, I could see, all right, maybe it's not accepted, but it's the same one. It's the same brand. What's the point of having the same brand if it doesn't work everywhere? So that was extremely frustrating. Also, there are some places that demand a PIN. When you use a credit card, you don't have a PIN. So it gets very frustrating. Just now, buying train tickets, the guy wanted a PIN and couldn't take the credit card without the PIN, which I didn't have. And okay, but that's one issue with the credit cards. The trains, something else.
That, you know, how did you buy that second ticket? Because the first trip to Oslo had to get canceled, and we eventually we had to book another train to Sweden. I don't know if we've gotten into this, but that was just the first part of the train booking systems failing us. We had the same problem getting onto this train. I think you should get into that a little bit. How we made it down from Tromsø was sort of a miracle in and of itself. We had to go to a tourist information, and because of this browser issue or whatever the problem was with the credit cards online, and we actually went to a tourist office, and that was really amazing because that woman was with us for quite a long time, and she was able to call a foreign train company and talk to a representative there and book our tickets for us over the phone, where they and in Stockholm they actually did take one of the credit cards. I don't know.
Well, she actually came up with a lot of alternative ideas because we went there hoping that she could help us, and she tried to call the train people too, and she was as critical of them as we were, saying they don't want to take responsibility for anything, they just want to blame the bank or anybody but themselves. But she came up with alternatives. First, she thought maybe taking a boat down the coast of Norway, but that would take too long. Why don't you go to...
It's very, very, very expensive.
Yeah, why not go to Stockholm instead of Oslo then? Go to Sweden instead of Norway. She's in Norway. She's a Norwegian travel agent, but she was honest enough to tell us that Stockholm was the nicest city than Oslo, and it was cheaper for us to go there. And so that's what we wound up doing. But to do that, she had to make a phone call to somebody in Sweden, her counterpart, and they had this long, long conversation back and forth to work it all out. And we asked later, what language were they speaking? And apparently, she was speaking Norwegian, the other person was speaking Swedish back to her, and they were able to understand each other that way. And that's a good relationship, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. And that was really, really cool. We were able to get down to Stockholm. And then, leaving Stockholm, we had problems with the backlog of people trying to actually catch trains and get out of Stockholm towards Denmark.
Because of the snow, because of the cold, things have ground to a halt in many places.
And she was able to book that train, even though we were in Stockholm for a couple of days. Didn't she book that train to get us to Denmark?
The travel person in Tromsø was able to book two tickets for us. She was able to book the ticket from Tromsø to Stockholm, which was the overnight train.
All the way down Sweden to Stockholm.
Yeah.
Then we were there for a couple of days, and she had booked... while we were still in Norway, booked the other leg of it, after, you know, a couple days later, way in advance, was able to book us from to two other countries.
Stockholm to Malmo, actually, which was in Sweden near Denmark.
Yeah, that's correct. So it was a Sweden trip, but it was several days after we arrived there. It seems like way out of her jurisdiction, but she was able to do it.
Well, the one thing we had to do was book our own ticket from Malmo to Copenhagen. Which is a very short ride. It's almost like a commuter train.
And that was a computer, wasn't it? Or yeah, you walked up to a kiosk.
I had a fight with the computer, but I'm not even up to that point yet.
It was a kiosk thing, and then but we eventually got it, and that was a very short
trip. But the thing is, leaving Stockholm was madness.
Yes.
We were there in Central Station, and it was just packed with people, and there was so little information being given. I mean, I've been in Penn Station when it's in similar situations, but I have to say Penn Station does a better job in situations like this. Maybe they're not used to a lot of snow and a lot of cold where trains are getting canceled left and right. We were basically watching our train, looking for the track to be announced or to see if it was going to be delayed like most every other train was being delayed. And we noticed what happened to other trains. hours would go by. You'd see a tram supposed to leave at, say, 1:12 in the afternoon, and it was currently 3 p.m., and that train still hadn't had its track announced. It was still there, and you didn't have any kind of information as to what was going to happen to it. Our train was getting close to being announced because other trains in front of it were either being postponed or a track was announced.
Yeah, it finally popped up on the board, but it didn't have a track number. It didn't have a time, a new time, adjusted time. And so we were watching it on the board, waiting. And all the other, maybe four others were popping up after it. And we're sitting there with all these people. We had been there for a while, waiting for it to even get on the board. It was on the board. There was only two trains on the board total out of, maybe 10 or 15 that weren't indicating what track or what time or even an adjusted time. The time came and went, right? And then our train fell off the board.
It just disappeared. We were watching the board, and then all of a sudden, what happened to the 1706? Our train was supposed to leave at 5:06 p.m. Where is it? It's just not there anymore. There's a 1700 in front of it. There's like a 1720 after it, but the 1706 is gone. And no announcements being made in English. I can't blame them for that. It's obviously Sweden. They speak Swedish. But still, some kind of an indication as to what happened to the train would have been nice. And the thing is, we had a radio show we had Off the Hook to do. We had to be in Denmark by 1 in the morning, at least, because that's the time at 7 p.m. in New York is. And we were already cutting it kind of close. We were supposed to arrive at something like maybe 10:30, but everything was being delayed, so we knew that was going to be pushed back a little bit. So we wandered around asking people what was happening. Nobody really knew. One person said, it disappeared, but it's coming back.
Yeah, we walked up to one of these people in a jacket who's there, as like crisis management for the SJ train company. And she's, standing there talking to people about their various woes with the delayed schedules. And basically we asked about this train. She said, oh, no, yes, it's going to be back. It'll be back. It'll come back onto the board. And we were like, okay. And, another woman walked up and started writing down. I said, because the original woman I talked to was asking me what train number. So there's two women there now. It was like her supervisor or somebody. And she just starts writing down the number of the train on a piece of paper.
You remember the number of the train?
505.
See, it's ingrained in our minds. 505, yeah. That was the number of our train.
Yeah, so she writes it down, and, she runs off. She's going to go check on it, or she's going to go, push it out there, with her bare hands or something. I don't know what she planned to do. But we basically hightailed it for a track number that you saw.
Well, I was scanning the board for anything to Malmö, which is our ultimate destination, and I figured, even if that's not our train, we should just bum rush our way onto it and see what happens, because it's going to where we have to go, and we'll get there in any event. And so that's what we did. Yeah, we saw that there was a train on a track close to us that was headed to Malmö. And we just pushed our way onto there. And I assumed when we got on the train that it was just pretty much a free-for-all. Anybody could sit wherever they wanted. But no, it turned out that we were sitting in somebody else's seat, so we had to stand up. And you wound up sitting on top of somebody's suitcase.
Yeah, I was sitting on a whole bunch of luggage in the very back of one side of the train. And there's a lot of people in the aisle. I have a feeling a lot of people were probably doing the same thing, standing and just choosing to get on this train. I was a little leery of it. I was like, are we going to get, in trouble or whatever, But at the same time, it was so chaotic. I felt like, fine, at worst, I'm an angry customer. And customer is right where I come from. So, fine, let's just hold our ground and see if we can't get there. And that was the other thing, is just the time crunch. We needed to get where we were going. And I had the feeling once we got on the train, this was the right choice. That was all you, though, too. You just had a gut feeling. And once we got on the train, I was like, there's a serious disconnect. We talked to these women who are there to do crisis management. I have a feeling they don't know a dang thing about this. They're just sort of telling people whatever they can, but they really don't know when the train's going to come back on the board. And I had the feeling we would have been standing there another 24 hours, before it came back on the board, and that girl's going to go home and end of her shift. We have to sit there in the train station. So.
Well, we were on the train, and even though we had to stand or sit on suitcases, we felt fortunate because we knew that our train, the 505, or the train number 505, was still back in Stockholm. And God knows when that train would ever have even left. And we try to show up in the middle of the night sometime and miss the show. So it was the right thing to do. And, okay, for 5 hours we had to be uncomfortable. But, occasionally people would get off the train. We'd try to sit in their vacated seats, but invariably somebody else would be assigned to those ones and we'd have to get up again. So it was kind of frustrating. There was a period where I was saying to myself, okay, I'm going to try to get a refund for this ticket because obviously I didn't get what I paid for, which was a reserve seat, something that you should get on a train. And because they lost our train, there's no reason not to do that. But then we were sitting comfortably when the conductor came, so I didn't think to do that. I thought, okay, everything's going to be fine now. And, of course, 5 minutes after she took our ticket, we got kicked out again because someone else wanted that seat. We eventually made it. I think we found a seat for the last hour or so of the train. But, boy, it was the ride from hell. And when we arrived in Malmo, I wanted to look at the board and see when the 505 train was actually going to arrive, if it was ever going to arrive.
And yeah, that was really interesting.
It was interesting because we looked at the board and saw that it had arrived at 11:15 p.m. And we looked at the clock and it was 11:15 p.m. And the realization suddenly hit us. My God, that was our train we were on the whole time. We were on the 505 train. It had somehow turned into another train. They hadn't told us that. We just jumped on the first train to Malmo, which happened to be the same one.
But it was not the 505 when it left Malmo.
No, it had
Stockholm.
It had a totally different number. And the thing that I wonder, and will always wonder, is whether we actually had seats on that train the whole time that we never used, and we didn't have to go through all the discomfort and misery that 5 hours entailed. But you know what? That's part of the whole travel experience.
It builds character.
It sure does. A lot of character was built on that trip. And also, when we got to Malmo, we had to buy another ticket to get to Copenhagen. And I went to a machine, and the machine apparently didn't know what Copenhagen was. I guess it was just a domestic machine. So I went to a woman who was more than just domestic, and she was able to sell me a ticket. And then we got on the train that took us to Copenhagen.
But this isn't the end of the train, catastrophes. We had a little bit of that after spending some time in Denmark.
Well, we want to talk about Denmark, too, but let's finish with the trains, because, yeah, that is the topic at hand right now. Well, we made it to Denmark on that little commuter train, and we made it to the show. We checked in 20 minutes before we went on the air. So that worked. We did it the right way, I guess. But then booking our ticket down to Berlin for the CCC Congress, we wanted to take the train that goes over the water, or actually goes on a boat that goes over the water. It's really unique. You basically take a train from Copenhagen. It goes to Hamburg, Germany first. But in order to do that, it literally gets onto a boat, and the boat takes the train to the other side, and then the train resumes its journey. I went onto the Deutsche Bahn website, which is the German rail, and noticed that they had some good prices. In fact, they had a great price for first class. It was actually the same cost as second class. And so I tried to book us a couple of tickets there, and every time I tried to book a couple of tickets, it wouldn't work. But if I booked one ticket, it would work. So I opened up two windows at the same time and tried to do everything as close as possible to each other, so I'd hit okay on two windows very, very close in time to each other. We'd get seats near each other, if not next to each other. And so I clicked okay on yours, clicked okay on mine. Yours went through, mine did not. Mine said, this offer does not exist anymore. It has just expired. Apparently you had gotten the last seat on the in the first class section. So I'm like, oh gosh, that's bad. Now not only are we not sitting next to each other, we're sitting in totally different classes. However, I quickly booked a ticket in second class for me so that I'd at least be on the same train. And I noticed something interesting. On the Deutsche Bahn website, when you buy a ticket, you can reserve more than one seat. And the cost for reserving another seat is something like 3-4 euro. It's not much at all. So you can buy one ticket and reserve two, maybe even more seats. I don't understand the logic behind that. It's very bizarre and weird. But what I did was I reserved two seats in my second class, and you had your one first class. So what we were going to do was kind of alternate with first class. We'd send somebody up to first class to get whatever is being given out there and bring it back to second class and share amongst the proletariat back there. Oh, we're stopping at another station, are we?
Speak for yourself. I was just going to sit in first class.
Yeah.
We would have gone on ships.
I'm not sure how kidding people are in situations like this, because once they see first class, it's a whole different matter.
That's right. They get a taste of it and
can't go back.
They don't know you anymore.
So, all right. You know, it was a bit of a pain doing it this way, but we did it that way, and we had tickets at least. Then yesterday, I just suddenly had a thought in my mind, because somebody had mentioned at some point, you know, there's two ways to get to Germany. There's the way on the boat, and there's the way by land. And
well, we were kicking around, too. We were exploring the metro in Copenhagen, and so I'm sure it jogged your memory a little bit, being on the different trains, and you realized, you said to me, gosh, you know, I wonder if the one we're on doesn't go on land instead. You were concerned. I was like, okay, I have no idea. I mean, you're pretty good with this stuff, so.
Well, there are a couple of issues here. First of all,
right.
I had ordered the Thomas Cook train book to arrive before we left, and it didn't.
I feel the blame lies squarely with them, by the way, for all of this.
Ordered this book from England back in November, and as of mid-December, it had not yet arrived, and as a result, I didn't have up-to-date information. And when I bought the ticket on the Deutsche Bahn website, it doesn't tell you which train goes over the water and which train doesn't. You don't get the actual list of the route until you buy the ticket. So, and it's a non-refundable ticket because it was a discounted price. So, yeah, I looked at the route it was taking, and sure enough, it was going by land. And we really wanted to go by boat. So we decided to go to the central station in Copenhagen today, try and work it out with somebody. Wasn't happening. Nobody was able to help us with this because it was a discounted ticket. It's a Sunday. It was German. All kinds of reasons why they couldn't help us. I even called Deutsche Bahn on the phone. And the woman there could not understand why I wanted to take the boat instead of the land. I was trying to explain, look, it's just a tourist thing. I just want to be on the damn boat. Please, is there any way I can get on the boat? And no, there's no way. You have to do other things. This ticket's no good for that. And
didn't she call you a fool?
She didn't call me a fool. She said that she thought the idea was fool. She said, yes, you could do this, but I think it is fool.
As in foolish.
Yeah.
And no, what she said fool, but
I put that aside. You know, that's, you got to pick your battles here.
Yeah, choose your battles.
And we were in the DSB, which is the Danish rail system. DSB office. I already asked one woman if she could offer any advice. And
right, but while you'd been on the phone, a younger guy, he had started his shift and was helping people.
He seemed friendly.
Yeah, you know, and you mentioned, hey, maybe you know, after this phone call with D-Bun, you were like, you know what, I'll just I'll walk up and see if maybe he can look at this and be a little more optimistic and maybe have some better ideas. And it turns out,
well, I approached him and sort of issued it as a challenge. I said, I'm wondering if you could offer me some advice here. I have this ticket, and I had the printout from the webpage with the you know, ticket stuff, a barcode on it, you know, that you get from Deutsche Bahn. Is there a way that this can be somehow used to get on the boat instead of going around by land? And he looked at it for a while and was trying to figure things out. And I said, I'm willing to buy another ticket just to Hamburg, since, you know, it wasn't that expensive, and we still had the ticket from Hamburg to Berlin on the other train, which, by the way, we still have a first class ticket in. We would just forego the connection from Copenhagen to Hamburg, which in this case was two different trains. It was one train into some part of Germany, and then there was another train from Germany to Hamburg that was on the original ticket. We wanted to switch that to the train to the boat that went to Hamburg. So I'm willing to buy that ticket and to sacrifice the one that's non-refundable. And he was able to find a way to do that. He also was able to find an earlier train that left 4 hours before the one that the other people were telling us was the first train to get on the boat. And so that's what we did. Bought another ticket, and that's the train we're on right now. In fact, he even said that I have a pair of tickets at this price, and I have a pair of tickets in first class at exactly the same price. Which would you prefer? I said, well, gee, let me think about that for a moment. And so here we are. We're in this, like, little booth. It's really kind of cool. It's a German train. It's an ICE train. I thought it was going to be a Danish train, but it's a little German train that's DSB in cooperation with DB. And that's what's going to be getting on the boat. We're in a little first class compartment here. We actually have four seats. It's kind of a little door that closes, so we have the perfect radio sound booth.
Look at that. The sunlight's coming through. We're just looking at the countryside here, and there's sunlight peeking through the clouds and lighting up an area of farmland.
Snow-covered countryside. Everywhere we've gone so far has been so freezing cold and snow-covered. And as we're recording this right now, there's a blizzard warning in New York City and back home. It's just incredible. What a winter this has been so far. It's still December.
Yeah, it's really magical. Makes for a festive holiday season. I really enjoyed it, and I'm thrilled to be able to see the scenery. And I don't know, I guess it's good that there's blizzards back in the States as well.
So now we're through the train part, right? I mean, we're still on the train, but right now we're in first class on the Danish leg of it, and we're going to get on the boat, and we're going to get on the Hamburg-Berlin leg with one seat in first class and two seats in second class. And, yeah, that's pretty much all. I mean, I'm sure there's future train issues that we're going to face, but right now that's pretty much everything we've covered.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I just think it's really disappointing because D-Bahn, you know, is very organized and, you know, they seem to have everything in order and have everything very intuitive and I don't know, high tech, very possible. But the fact that they can't find trains like this, like we talked to somebody in Denmark who was able to find this train, and you're on the phone with a woman from D-Bahn in Germany, that's just despicable. I don't know. I think they could do way better, and I think that's the kind of stuff that the Germans talk about when they're critical of their own train system. And you know what? I've wrestled with the D-Bahn website. I remember when I was going from Köln to Paris or something, or I don't know. I know it was a Thalys train, but I think I booked it on DB, and I've had so much trouble with their online system because it's all completely German, but it pretends to be friendly to foreigners.
Well, there's an English flag, and you click that, but then if you do something else, it goes back to German, and you can't get it in English. By the way, did you see the windmill?
Yeah, I did.
So a lot of windmills in Denmark.
That's cool.
We're going to see them on the train. You couldn't really see them in the city as much. What do you think of Copenhagen?
I really liked it. I got in touch with my Danish roots a little bit.
So you're part Danish?
Yeah.
And you didn't realize that until you were in Denmark. You suddenly said, oh my God, I'm part Danish.
Yeah, well, we were talking to Joachim on the way to his house when we were going there for Christmas Eve dinner. He was talking about just giving us kind of a brief introduction to the troubles they've had getting citizenship and whatnot for his wife, and it reminded me of some of the research that I did to get dual citizenship, and I was looking at different options, and of course all the countries I'm looking into are all the countries that are part of my own heritage, and I'm actually five different nationalities as far as ethnic heritage goes.
Are you comfortable letting the folks know what five countries?
Yeah, I think I could. Irish, German, Polish, Danish, and Ukrainian.
It's quite a mix.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot of different things, and I guess that's what you get in the U.S., is people that are all kinds of different ethnic heritages, and I didn't really realize it when I was growing up. I didn't really think about it, and then you start asking your parents more and more, like, what is my namesake? You know, where am I from? Who is this grandpa? And, you know, my mom knows everything, and sometimes I have to check in with her and ask her, and I actually talked to her and found out the name of the family that I'm related to, and it was kind of fun. So we didn't get a chance to really look into it, but I you know, got the name and got just get that reminder again so that I can, you know, maybe go back and look, find out what part of Denmark maybe I have relatives or my family came from on that little sliver of my ethnicity. But
it's a cool thing to do. I did that last year or 2 years ago. When was that? Last year. I did that in Ireland, and just found an old relative that I'd never met just by asking around in a small town. And it's a cool thing to look into your past a little bit, look into your ancestry.
Yeah, and have a connection outside of the U.S., you know, in another country, place where they have different language and different, you know, cultural heritage and traditions and stuff. It's just cool to try to get a taste of that and feel it, you know, for yourself, you know, and try to get in touch with it. So, I don't know. That was really kind of interesting walking around with that, like, in the back of my mind. And, I don't know, I enjoyed walking around the city during the holiday here, and we went to Christiania, which was really interesting.
Okay, now Christiania, we were kind of concerned whether or not that place still existed. It's kind of like a, I don't know if I'm doing it justice by calling it an anarchist commune, but it's basically a bunch of people who took over, I believe they were old military barracks or some kind of military complex back in the 1960s. They just took it over and they never left. It's kind of like a huge squat where people do as they please. There are no police. Basically, a lot of things happen there that simply don't happen in the streets of Copenhagen. Now, Denmark is very into following rules, but they're also into tolerance of people they disagree with. So Christiania is kind of...
bastion of this attitude, right?
It yeah, it's kind of a,
because of that.
It's kind of a paradox because here you have all these people that don't follow the rules according to mainstream society, and yet they're tolerated because they believe in tolerance of people they disagree with. But in any event, yeah, okay, so let's talk about...
I felt that in Christiania because, you know, they have their own anarchistic whatever rules, but right. Like they're tolerant of people who are visiting or tourists or want to walk through. They also are quite tolerant. I didn't feel like I had to conform to the norms in Christiania. So you get that in all parts
of it. Well, to a degree. I'd like you to describe your feelings first going into Christiania, but, for instance, one of their rules is no cameras, no taking pictures. They're rather paranoid about that, and for good reason, too, because they... certainly had their problems with the police, but going in there myself, I didn't even know they were still around because we had been talking about this for a number of years and couldn't really get information as to whether or not they had been shut down completely by the authorities or they were still existing. And I'm happy to say they are still existing. Whether that's going to go on for a long time is anyone's guess. But that first moment, we walked around quite a bit trying to find it, and we eventually did. And we walked into the gate. What were you feeling at that point?
I was kind of nervous because it was a little bit quiet. I mean, there were people there that were walking around as tourists, and then there were people there that obviously just passing through, or they live there, or they're getting to their house, or doing whatever they do there. And you had described it a little bit to me and told me to be a little bit cautious. So it just made me aware that things could be a little different. And, you know, in so far as people not liking if you've got a camera and you want to photograph them. So I actually didn't bring any of my camera equipment, which was kind of tough, but I was able to deal with that. I mean, I was really interested in visiting the place. So that kind of stuff, I was a little nervous because, gee, I mean, you know, maybe they don't like my clothes or, you know, maybe they want my jacket or something. I didn't know what exactly would go on if they would be sort of hostile or something, or look at us as complete outsiders. But I really felt like, you know, we could walk around there, and like they get visitors all the time, and they sort of just paid us no mind in a lot of ways. And plus, there were a lot of other people. There was a guy there with his family. It looked like he just went there, you know, because it was Christmas Eve and he wanted to just tour around that part. So.
Right.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt him.
I think we're approaching a Danish station.
Oh, cool. So, yeah, I was really anxious at first, but once we walked around a little bit, I felt a lot more comfortable. Even when we were walking down some of the tougher streets there, and it was really quiet because of the holidays, I think. There were a couple cafes, a couple bars. I saw, like, a bicycle factory, which they're known for all over Denmark and all over the world. Christiania bikes are this phenomena that has really blown up.
They also it's a bike with a box in front of it.
Right, right. Two wheels in front, one wheel in back, and it steers, so you can transport things. It's like a cargo bike, but with the cargo in front.
And these guys just invented that simple idea.
Yeah, and they've got a factory there, a small factory, and then they also had a regular, like, bike store. And the bike store looked kind of out of place because it was really fantastically, like... stocked.
It was like the one thing there that was like really modern, and it looked like it could be on any luxury street. You know, they had like bikes in the window that were like $10,000 bikes, road bikes, all kinds of bikes. So it was like the one business that like they took really, really, really seriously there. Although, I mean, all the businesses they took seriously, but it was like it looked a little out of place because it was so nice. But they take their bicycles very serious in Kristiania, so that was neat to see. And again, that was closed. A lot of the stuff was closed, and it was sort of icy and quiet. We did
train Næstved station, Næstved in Denmark. Sorry,
it's a good place.
I have to announce the stations.
Thank you. Yes, and that's one of the AEs that are connected. It's a weird letter.
Watch the gap between the cars.
Thank you.
And, you know, whenever we arrive at a station, we're always a little bit kind of nervous because we think someone might join us in our little cubicle here, in which case we wouldn't really be able to record quite as readily as we are now.
Hey, I could have some Danish people weigh in on some of this. I don't know.
Yeah, I suppose. I'm just a bit shyer with the microphone here. So we walked around Kristiania for, I guess, a couple hours. We went to a bar there, in fact. It was a smoke-filled bar. Absolutely, everybody seemed to be smoking in that place, and you don't see that in very many places. In fact, as one of the exits to Kristiania says, you are now entering the EU, which basically underlines it quite well that, you're in there. You're not in the EU anymore. You're in a totally alien environment.
Yeah. There was a lot of, like... impromptu art, like graffiti and some interesting sculptures and stuff. There was even a big barn, I think, that had pottery and like gardening stuff, so you could work on your garden or something. I don't know. And they had tags on things. I don't know. I guess they sold stuff as a sort of business. Some of the windows were actually cool. You'd look in this like military barrack, and you'd look in the kitchen, and it's got like nice fixtures on everything, really nice, you know, countertops and everything. So I have a feeling that they really take this old skeleton of a barrack and then really make it their own with whatever kind of nice things they can, as far as, you know, living accommodations, and you know, you see satellite dishes and you know, so there's a lot of amenities that they take care of, but you also get the sense that it's off the beaten path. There's not you know, official police, although they do have a garbage service, recycling service, bottles, plastic, everything is like separated for waste, which I thought was really cool. And you were wondering, as was I, you know, how do they get this stuff picked up? But I guess they do. You know, somebody steps up and is in charge of garbage, and they rally round it up and get it out to the curb, just like any other place.
Well, you mentioned that there are businesses there selling all kinds of things, and one thing that they sell is hash, pretty openly.
Yeah, they have like trailers and like little kiosks selling like baked goods and like souvenirs. There was a souvenir hut, and then there was like kebab, you know, a guy selling like fast food or hot dogs and stuff, and also, like, you know, paraphernalia, smoking stuff, pipes and stuff, and various, I don't know, recreational stuff. And then there was a interesting thing you see in basically one area, and it's actually on the map, and it's called Pusher Street. And I thought Pusher Street was really interesting. It's basically, like, a bunch of guys... maybe like 10 guys around each of these little card tables. They have like maybe 15 card tables or so, and they had oil drums that were burning, you know, stuff to keep warm. They had like you know, fire pits basically, and then around the fire pits you'd see like a couple card tables next to each other, and maybe there were like 10 of them, and each one had like a gang of guys, not a gang, but like a handful of guys standing around a card table. And on the card tables you'd see very clearly up front, you know, some prices and different types of hash, and they're just like bricks of like brown, so they actually look like brownies, but they're like these bricks of condensed resin from marijuana. And they also had big bags of you know, what appeared to be really nice weed. I'd say, you know, some of the tables had like, I don't know, like 3 pounds, maybe a pound or two on some of the lower end. But there were some tables with a lot of weed on.
All proudly displayed.
Yeah, proudly displayed, all different types and different names and stuff. And I don't know, it was really cool to see that. And we were told about some of the controversies that had happened in the past, and And I felt like they were a part of the community. I felt like it was it persisted there. But after we walked around a little bit, those guys seemed a little bit more like they weren't actually the Christianians, because it was only after that we walked around Pusher Street and some of the areas in there, we found the bar. And I think you pointed out that a lot of people in the bar they're more like people you see down on the docks, like at a marina, or, you know, guys that live on boats. There's a whole houseboat crowd in the Northwest, and they're kind of a little more gruff guys. They're, you know, they live at marinas and stuff. It's that kind of crowd. And, you know, a lot of them are into sustainability and organic food and stuff. So I liken the guys that live, you know, that worked in the bar to that kind of crowd. And they were a little bit different from the younger guys that were out there with the card tables, you know.
The mood just seemed different to me.
Yeah, I mean, they were, yeah, a little bit intense. That intent look, you know, like, yo, are you going to buy something? Are you here? You know, they want to keep people moving, and they're really, really feeling you out. And they're not there to, like, be happy and gregarious and make friends. They're sort of eyeing you for like one false move type of thing, and they're gonna do something because, like, they gotta protect their turf and that sort of thing, which begs the question. I mean, we heard about some of the controversy with the crackdowns and different things. You didn't even know if Christiania still existed, and it kind of made you wonder, are these people actually from the area? Are they just sort of gangsters from other areas where they know they can come into Christiania and safely do their pushing without having anybody in the neighborhood snitch or get them in trouble, that kind of thing? It's like a safe place for them to work, but they're not actually there, and the money actually doesn't stay in the community. But, you know, in the bar, it was only after the bar that I kind of realized, yeah, you know, the people in the bar are more like the locals, and they are open, and they allow the, you know, pushers to do their thing out there because they're on the streets selling whatever they got to sell, and Christiania is tolerant of that. But the one other thing I noticed is that they sold weed in the bar too. They had a menu for the weed, and, you know, honestly, I would have been a little bit more open to walking up to the bartender, who was like, you know, he's like a 60 year old guy. I don't know. He had a big white beard, and he was serving us beer, you know. And
Christiania beer.
Christiania beer, yes, labeled with the Christiania flag.
I have one of those bottles I'm going to bring home.
Yeah, exactly. And I would have been way more comfortable asking him for, like, some weed and some papers in the bar than going out to one of the pushers. And I think that's the distinction, you know, because they had a menu and prices. The prices were actually really, really competitive. It was like 25 kroner for anywhere between 7 to, like, 12 grams. So I think that's how I read it, and all different kinds of weed. And I was really impressed with that because those are great prices, I'd say. So I don't know. It was really, really cool, and I think rivals a lot of the coffee shop scene in Amsterdam, which is really commercialized. But, and then again, I mean, there's a parallel there. I feel like the Pusher Street guys were very, like, very much more like the commercial end, like, just out to make money, that kind of thing. Whereas, you know, it's, you hang out with the locals, you find out where people really are, you know, recreating, you know, joking and smoking at a bar, that kind of thing. You really want to talk to the locals who live there and know the scene more than you want to just participate in some trendy kind of commercialized thing. So there were some parallels to what goes on in Amsterdam too, but it was really cool to see, and I think it was looser than in Amsterdam too, because obviously, I mean, this is just out in the open. These guys are keeping warm with, like, oil drums full of logs and, you know, burning stuff. And
it was really cold.
It was very, very cold and very icy in there. But that was something I wanted to talk about. I mean, that was very, very interesting. And there's other angles and other controversy going on with that we can get into at another time. And when we went later on to dinner with Joachim, our friend who invited us for Christmas Eve dinner, he was able to shed a little bit more light on the current state of affairs with Christiania and in relation to some of the pushing and stuff. But, you know, I really tried to soak up all of it and not just look at that one attribute. Although, you know, on a holiday in the middle of the winter, that's the one thing that does not close down. That and the bar, so.
Yeah, I'm just happy it's still there, and they have this very alternative lifestyle going on right there in the middle of the big city. It's one of those unique things about Copenhagen, and glad we were able to find it. I don't know what else there to say about Copenhagen. We had fun wandering around.
Yeah, we got to explore the metro a little bit, which is pretty substantial. We learned their zone system, and we learned that you can buy tickets for dogs.
Dogs do have to buy tickets, that's true. Dogs, infants, there's all different categories.
And the dog tickets are actually fairly well priced. I think it was like 23 for an adult, and the dogs were around 11.50 kroner, so
or higher during rush hours.
Yeah, was it higher for dogs in rush hour? Okay, well, dogs really got to go at off-peak hours if they want to travel.
Why does the dog carry the ticket? That's what I want to know.
I would say in his collar, or maybe in his teeth. But it
they
would
write the dog up if he doesn't have a ticket.
Yeah, well, I just want to know if dogs travel alone. If they buy tickets and travel by themselves, I think that would be sort of interesting. But at any rate, we had a blast though. I mean, I think we navigated the food thing. I mean, price has come up on this trip a lot, and I think Denmark was a little bit more fair. It was like Stockholm in that we could get by.
Still, it was we occasionally are astounded by how much we wound up paying. We had a couple of burgers and a couple of beers, and it was something like $65.
And no, I'm sorry, 60 euros.
60 euros. See,
$80.
It just keeps getting worse. And here, you know, in Scandinavia, things just are very expensive, but people seem to be able to manage that with the salaries they get. We're talking to people who teach, who make the equivalent of $100,000 a year, which does not happen in the United States. And also, we had different currencies to deal with, so that got very confusing, too. We had Norwegian kroners, we had Swedish kroners, and we had Danish kroners. And Sweden and Denmark are part of the EU, by the way, but they choose not to use the currency. It makes things rather confusing. And now we're heading to Germany, where things are a lot cheaper.
Yeah, I've never wanted to use the euro more, and that just feels weird saying it, because the euro is very, very expensive compared to the U.S. dollar. So it is sort of funny to be longing for the euro with all these other currencies. But we did. We balanced it, I think. You know, if we had something that was a little more expensive, then we would maybe try to just have a snack or go a cheaper route. We looked for specials. That was another thing.
Yeah, there are ways. Like in Sweden, they have lunch deals. We just found out the words for that, and we looked for good lunch deals. We wound up getting shawarma in Copenhagen at a very good price. And the cheap things seem to matter more. They really do. They seem to taste better, and you get more value for them. And also, you know, unlike in the States, you don't overdo it. You don't have these huge dishes and have too much food. You basically get what you can afford or what you want at the moment.
Yeah. And I think the food quality is pretty good, even in a big city in Europe. It feels really a little bit on the healthy side. I don't know, less processed. I don't know. The shawarma was very authentic. I mean, I've never seen kebab. As large a kebab rolling around on a spit. I mean, they had some massive kebabs spinning around that they were cutting the shawarma from. And I don't know, we just found a really good spot. And
also, the places we stay, we were able to find places and various online services that were a fraction of the cost of the normal places. And they were great. They were in the middle of town. They had all the things that you could possibly want. They took very good care of you. And you don't have to pay top dollar. Sometimes you got free breakfast and everything like that. You can really get good deals if you just look around a little bit.
And location's key. You really want to be in the center. You want to be at a place that's accessible to the train station, whether you're coming or going. You know, if you're coming in really late, you don't want to walk or take a taxi or something really far. And then on the day-to-day, when you're just touring around, it's nice to be in a central location, because you can really just go and explore any part of the city, whether you're walking or taking a metro or you know, visiting with a friend, you know, that's driving you someplace. It's just really nice to be centrally located. I don't know. I like the architecture. I liked walking out to the canal in New Haven, and we were able to look at some of the water and see like a harbor and some of the architecture out there, and the sunlight, the way it was coming off of some of the ice, because all these rivers, all these canals are very iced over, and, you know, completely solid. And, you know, we see, like, birds and animals, like, living in this Arctic condition. I think it's really, that's kind of cool to take in. And I don't know, that was really fun for me the other day, too.
It was minus 15 degrees Celsius, and ducks are jumping into the water. I couldn't figure that out.
Yeah, and we're ducking into hotels and bars as we see fit because we're freezing, you know. When you're walking on a tour like that, you end up going down into the metro and buying a ticket just to get sort of thawed out and plan your next move. And, you know, that was cool too, seeing the way the train system works and figuring out the tickets and all of that. Yeah, I don't know. Copenhagen was really nice. I'd like to go back there. There's some things we didn't get to participate in that I would have liked to. Seems like things changed a lot, you know, since you had been there. I don't know. It really would be kind of cool to go back and visit and maintain some of the relationships. Definitely, y'all come.
Find some of your relatives.
Yeah, find some of my relatives and meet up with people we met, like y'all come. We were unable to meet some of the other people with the Copenhagen Game Collective. We were going to spend some time with them, but it just didn't sync up with the holidays. So definitely, I think we should come back and soak up some more of Danish culture, participate in things down the road. We didn't get to do sauna.
We tried to go to a sauna, and that didn't work out either. Well, you know, it's a kind of weather for it, but they were closed over the holidays. Well, let's not miss out on we're in first class on the train, we get a little snack as well as water, tea, and coffee free of charge, but we have to go and get it before the train stops being a train and turns into a boat.
All right. Are you going to go first, or do you want me to go, or?
You go ahead and go. I'll watch the stuff.
You want to do that? Okay.
Yeah, this little kid over here looks like a klepto, so.
Yeah, we got to watch our stuff. Okay. It looks like we're stopping now. We might be stopping at a station. If we're stopping at a station...
Gosh, that sunlight's beautiful. It's coming in so, so orange and yellow off the snow. It's a really neat angle. What is it at? It's early afternoon, right? It's 1, 2?
More or less, yeah. Vordingborg. Station is Vordingborg. We are stopping at right now. All passengers alight for Vordingborg. We are on our way down to Germany. First class accommodations. Great. Any final words, Kyle?
No. We'll check in later, and we'll see what there is going on. I can't wait to be at the CCC conference coming up. So we'll check in later and see what kinds of things we've gotten into.
More misadventures, I am sure.
And mischief.
Love stories, think about it, it's blooming like a flower. It's the result of lovers that whisper by the hour. We're talking night and day that I think it's time to go. I realized that once she could be mine, that's all. Love stories, think about it, it's blooming like a flower. It's the result of lovers that whisper by the hour. We're talking night and day that I think it's time to go. I realized that once she could.
Gæstemix med DJ NML.
Love me forever, love me forever. Så har du fået DJ NML også denne første juledag, og i den sidste halvdel, der fik du Stromae af Law & Dance i RH Remixet, så var der R. Kelly, Freak in the Club, Vato Gonzalez og R2 Extra Freaky Mixet, Morten Breum igen sammen med Camille Jones denne gang, I Like It, så var der Avicii and Sebastian Drums, My Feelings for You, dejligt nummer Mads Langer, You're Not Alone i Dab Ross Remixet, Don't Call the King, Keep the Rhythm i Jonathan Carey remixet, og til sidst Red DJ Love Me Forever i Adolfo DJ Forever mixet. Husk, at du også kan opleve DJ NML næste lørdag i nytårsshowet. Men nu er der tid til en anden mand, og han giver dig en masse trance musik. Det er tid til gæstemix. Her er DJ Sash i Monster Mix.
Klokken er 24, og nu er det tid til endnu et gæstemix.
There we go. Very nice. No apologies. Probably not for you. First off, it's on every other week. Secondly, it's on from 3 o'clock in the morning till 6:30 in the morning on Saturday morning. And it always starts like this. Our spiritual den mother is Patti Smith. Our patron saint is Louis Prima.
Louis Prima, the best.
And other shows might have a format. We sort of pride ourselves on not having a format, so it might go like this.
And now a message from the President of the United States, George W. Bush.
Good morning.
It's time to let your bones take over. It's time to drop to your hands and knees and crawl.
Okay. Sweat! Right. Sweat!
Or might go like this.
I love to sing about a mooner and a juner and a springer. I love to sing.
Or might go like this.
Be treen by a jade in her means. No, be mean by a trade for some jeans. I'll be jean by a teen with some jade. No.
Doyle Redlin for The Onion Radio News.
2 in the morning and the party still jumping cause my mama ain't home.
It always ends like this. So you probably won't be joining us every other Saturday from 3 to 6:30 in the morning, where I've been confounding listeners since 1990. But we understand. No apologies, exclusively on WUSB Stony Brook.
Kids. Finn with you. Finn's Revolution till 9 p.m. right here on WUSB Stony Brook. Tonight, a happy birthday to Elvis. What? Oh. Oh, I got my information in the wrong spot. Anyway, tonight, Mr. Benji Kaplan, Brazilian guitar player, will be joining us, plus tons of tickets to give away and CDs, too. Stay tuned.
Let's begin.